Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 8th March. It's the International Women's Day, and I'm glad you could join us here on Africa Link. My name is Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. Congratulations to all women in the world on this special day. On our Facebook page, DW Africa, there's a lot of discussion going on, so do check it out. But first, let us give you a glimpse of what we've lined up for you.
Yes, as the world marks the International Women's Day, we find out why it's taking too long for the women's movement to achieve so much.
But overall, there's also very often a lot of talk and far too little money.
And we feature African women in the film industry.
It's rare to see women who will go and say, excuse me, I was raped. Even the simple act of declaring it to the police, even when you know who your aggressor is already a problem because there is a feeling of shame, of embarrassment. It's as if it was you that provoked your aggressor.
These are some of the stories that we've lined for you, but before all the details to these stories, here's another chance to listen to other stories making headlines around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has warned African countries to be wary of the Chinese government and its loan facilities, claiming that the continent is being exploited by China. Tillerson, who is in Africa for a five-day official visit, today met with African Union Chairman Musa Faki Mahamat in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Their discussion mainly focused on security, trade and development. However, Tillerson said the U.S. is not trying to keep Chinese investments away from the continent.
They do not bring significant job creation locally. They don't bring significant training programs that enable African citizens to participate more fully in the future. And oftentimes the financing models are structured in a way that the country, when it gets into trouble financially, loses control of its own infrastructure or its own resources through default.
The UK Interior Minister Amber Rudd says the attack on a former Russian double agent to the UK was an outrageous crime. Investigators have confirmed a rare poison was used to try kill Sergei Skripal and his daughter, who were found unconscious on Sunday. Russian government has dismissed speculations that it could be behind the attack.
The use of a nerve agent on UK soil is a brazen and reckless act. This was attempted murder in the most cruel and public way. People are right to want to know who to hold to account. The investigation is moving at pace, and this government will act without hesitation as the facts become clearer. We will respond in a robust and appropriate manner once we ascertain who was responsible.
Now to Syria and an aid convoy bound for the besieged Syrian opposition enclave of Eastern Ghouta has been postponed as fighting in the area intensifies. Syrian government forces have seized half of the territory held by rebels in the Damascus suburb, the last opposition stronghold close to the capital. Around 400,000 people are believed to be trapped in the area. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The International Criminal Court appeal judges have upheld most of the convictions of Jean-Pierre Bemba for interfering with witnesses during the war crimes trial. Bemba, a former Congolese vice president, was sentenced last year to 1 year in prison for interfering with witnesses for the war crimes committed by a militia he commanded in Central African Republic. Moving on, Sierra Leone's election head has called for patience as vote counting continues following tensions after a police raid on an opposition leader's home. More than 3.1 million Sierra Leoneans were eligible to participate in the general elections held yesterday on Wednesday, which passed without any incident. And finally, here in Germany, one of the country's most popular politicians, Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel, has announced he will not be included in Chancellor Angela Merkel's new coalition government. Gabriel posted a lengthy tweet saying he had been informed by his party, the Social Democrats, that he would not receive any cabinet position. Gabriel leaves his post after a bitter row with the party leadership. For more news and information, visit our website dw.com or our Facebook page DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyinge.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program on in this International Day of Women. My name is Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Now, we have come a long way and there's still a long way to go. That has been the message across the world as it marked the International Women's Day. Indeed, in some places, women are still inferior and are treated as property. Some different countries mark the day differently. In some places, it was celebration, while in others, people took to the street to demonstrate under the theme Press for Progress.
Press for Progress, indeed, because I believe the media has a big role to play. Well, in his message to mark the day, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said, achieving gender equality and empowering women and girls is the unfinished business of our time and the greatest human rights challenge in our world.
And to get an understanding of the women movement, I've been speaking to DW's editor-in-chief Ines Paul, and I started by asking her to describe the place of women in today's society.
You know, it always depends at which countries you're looking. And I think there are countries in the world where the positions of women have gotten really better over the last couple of years. But there are far too many countries where girls and women are still facing horrible threat and violence every day.
Now, let's take a little bit of a historical perspective. In 1995, the UN Beijing Declaration that actually laid the foundation for women emancipation resolved to do, among other things, address the issues of women in power and decision-making. Education was one of the key aspects there. We had health in there, poverty, human rights, and women in armed conflict. When we look back 23 years down the road, how much of this has been achieved?
This is always important to make these resolutions, you know, to announce and precise goals, because then you can go back to these resolutions and say, hey, listen, this was our commitment. But overall, you know, there's also very often a lot of talk and far too little money. So, for example, when it comes to education, better education for young girls, you just need the structure and you need the money and you need the educated teacher who are stressing this issue. So, yes, it is good that we have had these resolutions in 1995 and later, but this is still, like, most of all, it's words and action has to be done.
Action has to be done. Is this suggest that there seems to be lots of more talking compared to action?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the good news is that now with social media, women are able, you know, to address their requests. We are not dependent anymore on government media or even on free media, which some of them don't really want to address this issue. So it's good that we can make ourselves being heard on Twitter and Facebook.
That's an interesting point. Now, like you just indicated, we are making ourselves heard. Something that convinces me that actually the women movement is making headway. But at the same time, we also continue to hear that women are experiencing sexism in the workplace, in the political setting, in different aspects of life. Now, this is something that is not only limited to developing countries, but also experienced here in Europe and elsewhere in the world. Now that you're in Brussels, the seat of the European Union Parliament, I would like to hear from you. Can we expect something coming out of the EU in regards to this?
I think so. You know, there are very many strong women in the European Parliament, and I think gender equality is really high on the topics which are discussed regularly. So I think the European Union is one force in the world which is really fighting for the equality of women's rights and equal pay and all those things. But again, when it comes to the workplaces, discrimination is something women are just facing pretty much every day.
DW's editor-in-chief, Ines Paul. Now, Eddie, how did you celebrate Women's Day, actually?
Well, you saw me. I mean, I'm a feminist. I was already in front of Deutsche Welle's entrance, and I was holding this placard talking about women.
Demonstrating.
Yeah, demonstrating.
That's encouraging.
Saying
that's
that women
hands
equal
up for
rights.
You, Eddie.
Thank you very much. But, comments have been coming through on our Facebook page. Now, Wenzel Bishop says, in my country, Nigeria, women are treated fairly. They are also given equal rights. Now, that is a very audacious statement. I guess we'll have to research much into that, but women definitely deserve that. But still on women, it's female filmmakers in Africa are bound, right? But they are often not heard about. This year's film festival, Films Femmes Afrique, held in Dakar in February, paid tribute to African women on and off the screen. In Hollywood, the Weinstein Affair and Me Too movement has caused shockwaves in the US and Europe's film industry.
Yes, indeed. But unfortunately, it's yet to take off in the African continent. But that doesn't mean that nothing is being done in Africa. Young female makers are trying to change things despite the obstacles and create their own Me Too movement where their work speaks for itself. Emmanuel Londe has more.
In September 2017, the Hollywood film industry was rocked by sexual abuse allegations against American film mogul Harvey Weinstein. Soon, women denounced sexual abuse by male actors and industry leaders on social networks. But in Africa, the hashtag didn't take off. Overall, the Me Too movement was met with silence on the continent. For filmmaker Giovanni Adogino Zinzu from Benin, sexual abuse just isn't spoken of publicly, she says.
We know Africa. Africa is, even when you suffer inside. It's rare to see women who will go and say, excuse me, I was raped. Even the simple act of declaring it to the police, even when you know who your aggressor is already a problem because there is a feeling of shame, of embarrassment. It's as if it was you that provoked your aggressor.
The film festival's goal is to showcase African women and to give them an arena to be heard and tell their stories. This year, the overriding theme was to educate Africa and the world about these topics, as Amayel Ndiaye, one of the festival organisers, explains.
Education is a means to emancipate oneself, to succeed in resisting social oppression, and also successfully move towards something new, towards something different, and towards more freedom.
Despite the arduous conditions women must navigate through to see any of their work come to fruition, African women's film production nevertheless continues to grow and expand, offering surprising creative and critical stories, which in their own way provide a Me Too kind of movement which is uniquely African and which is slowly, slowly changing the narrative. For DW, Emmanuel Londe in Dakar.
That was Emmanuel Londe with that report.
Now, we have a comment here very quickly from Les Brown. He says, when will women get satisfied? We can't even change what God has designed. Women are very important to us. They deserve recognition, but God made them to occupy the position they do today. No matter what humans do, this will never change. This is a comment from a gentleman. Keep it to Africa Link, and we shall continue reading your messages as they come.
Voting began in Sierra Leone early on Wednesday for the 2018 general elections, as over 3 million people will decide the country's next president and other government officials. Counting of the votes has already begun, with results expected within 10 days. We earlier spoke to DW's Abubakar Jallo in Sierra Leone and first asked him what the general mood is like during the vote counting process.
Well, the mood in Kono, where we currently are, is nothing different from any other day. People have resumed their normal day activities. They are out and about shopping or selling, doing their business. The mood across the country as well is pretty stable. I've been speaking to a few folks in Bo and also in Freetown, and from what they're telling me, there hasn't been any skirmishes around.
What do these preliminary results so far suggest?
Most of the results that they've announced so far, these results have come from the strongholds of the SFPP. They're pulling out quite big numbers. The APC is also pulling out big numbers from its strongholds. But it's interesting that in Kono, where we are, this new party called the Coalition for Change, the C4C, has done extremely well here. So far, people are saying that they've swept all seats in Kono.
So far, it's not too clear who's winning or not. It seems to be still keenly contested.
This is not electronic ballot system. It is paper. So the count is one by one in the presence of everyone. So it's going to be between now and 2 weeks from now. That's when we would know exactly who
What are the major challenges that await the next president?
The challenges are enormous in Sierra Leone. The government that is going to come in here has a lot to do. I mean, if there is actually no discipline in that, the amount of money that the government is taking in to carry out this project, the next president is going to have a lot of work to do with those to put the coffers of the state together.
That was DW's Abubakar Jallow reporting from Sierra Leone.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. Do check the conversations on our Facebook page. We'll be reading them loud on air.
Next, we shall be hearing from Tanzania that has now embarked on imprisoning teenagers who get pregnant.
I was arrested and taken to a police station in the nearest city of Tandahimba. They told me they'd arrested me because I was pregnant.
But before we get into that, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has begun his week-long tour of sub-Saharan Africa, where he is scheduled to visit Djibouti, Chad, Kenya and Nigeria after Ethiopia has been his first stop. He met with the Ethiopian government officials as well as the Africa Union Commission in Addis Ababa. He, among other things, stressed the need for Africa to be cautious of its dealings with China, while stressing the U.S. commitment to ensuring mutually beneficial relationships with the continent. DW correspondent Coletta Wanjoli has more.
This is the first time that Rex Tillerson is visiting Africa in his position as U.S. State Secretary. He is keen to find out what kind of relationship Africa needs that will promote more mutual benefit between the two continents. As part of this, he has reiterated his caution to Africa about its dealing with China, which over time is expanding its presence in Africa, adding that China is out to exploit African countries.
Our message is for countries to consider carefully what the terms of those agreements are and not forfeit any elements of your sovereignty as you enter into such arrangements with China. We welcome Chinese participation, but we hope they will follow international rules, international norms, and respect the sovereignty of countries.
However, the African Union chairperson, Mahamat Musa Faki, responded by saying Africa will not accept a monopoly in partnership and every state had the right to deal with countries they deemed fit.
You're aware the African continent has many partnerships. I think the Africans are mature enough to engage in partnerships of their own volition, which will be useful for the countries and the continent. So there is no monopoly.
In other talks, Tillerson reiterated the U.S. support in assisting Africa fight terrorism, which is imminent in many regions.
For the counterterrorism efforts, we had a very good exchange on various ways that we can consider creating a more sustainable and certain funding model for the counterterrorism efforts, both not just through the G5 Sahel, but also AMISOM and other activities to win the war against terror.
The United States has offered $533 million in aid to people affected by food shortages and conflict in Somalia, South Sudan, Ethiopia, and the Lake Chad Basin. While Tillerson is in Ethiopia, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is visiting too, but it is not clear if the two will officially meet. After meeting with Ethiopian government officials, Lavrov is set to meet the AU Commission leadership on Friday. This comes after he told reporters it was inappropriate for Tillerson to criticize China's relationship with African countries.
That was DW's correspondent Coletta Wanjoi.
Youzone.
Getting an education in Tanzania is a privilege that many can't afford. And if you are privileged, you better be careful not to get pregnant or to impregnate a girl, or else you are headed to jail. Tanzania still has old laws that bar pregnant girls from schooling, and with President John Magufuli being a devout Catholic, this is not about to change. But with inadequate sex education, many girls are victims of sexual exploitation and rape. Maida's Hassan Ilonga is one such victim. Neil King and Bettina Rule met her in her rural village and filed this report.
Little Chinaiza Razul is upset. Or maybe she's just hungry. Her mother, Maida's Hassan Ilonga, tries to calm the tiny baby. The 19-year-old also looks as though she's close to tears.
I'm still hurting and sad, even though it's been a few months. But I would still like to go back to school. I had my own plans for my life.
Those plans were derailed when she became pregnant, at the age of 18, just before she was supposed to graduate from high school. Maidas Hassan says her then-boyfriend forced her to have sex. He locked her up and she couldn't escape. In many Tanzanian schools, girls are made to undergo monthly pregnancy tests. When Maidas tested positive, police came to the classroom to get her.
I was arrested and taken to a police station in the nearest city of Tandahimba. They told me they'd arrested me because I was pregnant, even though I hadn't graduated yet. I was locked up in a cell for one day.
Under decades-old laws in Tanzania, state schools are allowed to ban young mothers from attending classes. Sebastian Werayuba is the district commissioner of Tandahimba, where young mother Maidas lives with her infant daughter. The region is about 600 kilometres, or 370 miles, away from Tanzania's biggest city, Dar es Salaam.
Fifty-five pregnant schoolgirls had to stop their secondary education, and seven had to leave primary school. So far, we've managed to arrest and interrogate six girls and their parents.
Officials said the fathers of these babies were being sought. The young women and their parents, meanwhile, were released on bail.
I wanted to be a doctor, but since I was expelled from school, the hopes I had for my life have been destroyed.
Her ex-boyfriend disappeared when he heard about the pregnancy. Tandahimba is a rural area in Tanzania's southeast. Maida's parents are farmers. They cultivate a few fields and look after goats. Maidas's father, Hassan Mfalme Ilonga, hardly talks to his daughter. He's outraged, not least about his recent arrest.
I was arrested for an offense that I didn't even commit. I invested in my daughter and did everything I could to ensure she had a future. I never went to school myself, but I sent her to school from the first grade to almost the end of high school. And then she messed everything up. Wasted money that I earned through hard work in the fields.
Neil King and Bettina Roll prepared that report. Not so pleasant. It's not a good fate for the young girls there in Tanzania.
Not at all. It definitely baffles my mind. But also on Facebook, some comments have come through. Makanga Ronnie says, I think a social problem cannot be solved by violence, especially by police. Research needs to be done to establish the cause of the pregnancies, and an immediate solution should be made.
And Iwani Basel says the state should be running behind those who impregnate the teenagers and not arresting the teenagers.
Mark Shaw says, how does this help the pregnant teenagers?
And Hakim Ibrahim says, I think the girls should be given a second chance. Very interesting comments there. Keep them coming. As and when we can, we shall read them.
Speaking out.
When civil war broke out in Somalia, Ali Hassan Sufi fled to Yemen. But the war came to Yemen and he was on the run again, back to his home country. Already he has lived through two terrorist attacks, which he was very lucky to survive. This report by Bettina Ruhl and presented by Christina Kripal takes us through his current life in Somalia.
On mornings like these, when there is nothing to eat in the house, Ali Hassan Sufi frets about how to find money to send his children to school. Sufi misses life in the Yemenite refugee camp where he lived with his family for 20 years.
We had a good life. We were content. We had enough to eat every day, even vegetables and milk for the children. I managed to save about $20 a day from the income from my own restaurant. We lived well. This is only possible in times of peace. Besides, it is dangerous to work as a cook in Mogadishu. Twice there were terrorist attacks on hotels where I worked that day. I was lucky to survive.
Those times are long gone. The civil war in Somalia started in 1991. 3 years later, Ali Hassan Sufi and his wife sought refuge in Yemen. The children were born and went to school in the refugee camp near Aden, managed by the United Nations. Sufi was elected by the camp's 20,000 refugees to act as their spokesman. But in January 2015, he decided to go home. Not that he expected life to be better there, but he was wary of constant bombardments, cholera epidemics, and other diseases. Ali Hassan Sufi and his wife, Farhia Abdirahman Mohammed, took the boat back to Somali's capital, Mogadishu. Her husband goes out every day hoping to find some work. Sometimes he is hired for a day and brings home $10, sometimes $50 for the whole month.
I feel like a refugee, not like someone who returned home. We used to have a house here, which my husband sold to pay for our flight to Yemen. We just thought about surviving the war. Nobody was thinking about the future. Now I feel homeless.
The perpetrators of the terrorist attacks are the radical Islamic militia Al-Shabaab. Hotels and restaurants are a favorite target.
I worry very much when my husband is working somewhere. On the other hand, the children get hungry and ask me for food all the time. My husband doesn't really have a choice. He has to trust in God and look for work.
A report by Bettina Rule.
Now, Eddie, let me take you back to our top story. People have been commenting positive, negative, different opinions about the International Women's Day. And we have this one coming in form of a voice mail from one of our listeners.
Women's Day doesn't only mean it's for women. It also means they have recognized that they have the responsibility and they are carrying on their responsibility.
I think that men should talk about women's issues on Women's Day as it will increase the momentum on valuing various women's rights issues that have been undermined and have been subjected to oppression, discrimination, and breaking the barriers to gender stereotypes that has been currently existing in various communities. It's something that really isn't surprising if men do talk about women's issues on Women's Day, because more than ever, currently in the current generation that we are in, women's issues have finally been given that center stage and have been prioritized.
Women issues have been given a center stage and men should talk about women issues on this day. Interesting comment there. Do you share the same opinion, Eddie?
It definitely sounds like exactly what I've been doing. And again, as I was part of the demonstration going on. But, you know, even before we got onto the show, it shouldn't even be just a day that we're celebrating women. Women should be celebrated every single day, every second of the day to be precise. Otherwise, the saying is that so one day for women and other days for the men. Is that what it is?
Eddie, thank you so much for being behind the women. I am so proud of you. But that's not all we've been covering on our program today. We've also been covering a story about the Russian foreign minister and the American foreign minister in Africa. And we've been having comments coming in here. One of the ones that I find very interesting is Carlo Camboni, who says, everybody is looking for something in Africa. It's been so for centuries. And the only remaining constant factor is that no Africa has no friend outside Africa.
Interesting comment. Abwaji Williamson adds, they only pretend to love us simply because of our natural resources. Africans must think far and fast.
Interesting. We know that the two foreign ministers, that's the one of Russia and the US, are both in Ethiopia now. From what we gathered from our correspondent on the ground, Coleta Wanjohi, they've not yet met. And we yet don't know the agenda of the Russian foreign minister. But we shall keep you updated as soon as we get that. Another one coming in from Albert Gardner here says, the great greedy imperialist will go to any lengths to create confusion among Africans so as to loot the African resources. But Africa should wake up. They are not your friends.
Yeah, well, you cannot trust anybody, unfortunately. But we must be able to strike better deals. That's all I'm going to say. There's a constant separation and everyone wants a piece of Africa, but we must make the right deals.
And Mohamed Perez says it will happen. They will certainly destroy Africa because they've already destroyed the Gulf and the Middle East. Now they are moving to Africa. that is what they are good at doing.
Well, thank you very much for your comments.
We really do appreciate all the time. We thank you for being with us in here on Africa Link. And as usual, we keep you up to date. We'll be here same time tomorrow. From me, Jane Ayeka Kumet.
And me, Eddie Micah Jr.
It's a bye-bye.